Good morning. It's too snowy and cold to be at work or outside, so stay in and be warm with us. I'm Christopher Purdy. Welcome to All Sides Weekend. Today we talk about books. It's one of my favorite programs, and we have quite the lineup today, including a debutante. Cassie Rose is here, WOSU's book critic, who also will have us acting like adults. Cassie also has a wonderful blog called thelongestchapter.com. WOSU's Fred Anderle is back with us. That's always a wonderful day for us when Fred comes back. Of course, he sat in this chair for many, many years with being heard at this time of day. He is currently an associate at the OSU Humanities Institute. He is a published poet, and he will be appearing on Monday, the 28th, at Hospital Poets at, well, we'll talk about that
we'll
more
later
when
that.
I put my glasses on. And Mark Maxwell is here. Mark is the store manager of the Bethel Road Half Price Books. And I thought it would be nice to have somebody in book retailing come in and tell us what he's noticing about what people are reading, what's going. And anybody who loves books loves Half Price Books. And there are five, right? Five locations?
There are five in town. That's correct.
Oh, okay. Name them for me, just so we all know.
My store is the Bethel Road store. We have a store on Lane Avenue, close to campus. We have a store in Westerville, a store on North High Street, and a store on Bryce Road at Bryce and Tussing.
Terrific. We'll want your phone calls at 292-8513. We always want to know what you've been reading, what you like, perhaps what you didn't like. And we're going to start with Fred Anderle. Can you expand on your next reading with the Hospital Poets?
Sure. It's at the Hospital Poets at the Ross Heart Hospital at noon on Monday. And Ross is on campus at 452 West 10th Avenue. 12 o'clock, it's, I must say, a collaboration of the OSU College of Medicine, the OSU Alumni Society of the College of Medicine, the Medicine Writers Group, and the Medicine and the Arts Group at the OSU Wexner Medical Center. It's just for anybody to come. You can be with the hospital. You cannot be with the hospital. We're going to read poetry of all kinds, not just mine, but we'll have Billy Collins. We'll have Dylan Thomas, anybody you can possibly think of. Just have fun and come in for a half hour or 45 minutes and listen to some poetry. So everybody's invited.
Why the location? What's the connection between poetry and the hospital?
Well, you know, no necessary connection, but just the idea of bringing into the hospital setting all kinds of arts, and in particular poetry, so that people, there could be heart patients there, there might be heart staff. Mm-hmm. Figuring that poetry is something, I mean, whether it's amusing poetry or very serious poetry, is something that could maybe inspire people, maybe lighten their day a little bit too, give something.
Fred, how long have you been writing poetry?
Oh, yeah, fifth grade.
Really?
Yeah, really since the fifth grade.
25 years. 20. Good.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent.
Precisely.
And later in this broadcast, you'll do some reading for us.
Absolutely.
I hope you
Thanks.
Brought some with you. Cassie Rose, you always bring the best books because I always, when I finish this program with you, I hightail it to the Whetstone Library immediately to see what's good. So give me, start us off with something really luscious.
Oh, I'm going to start you off with Beautiful Ruins by Jess Walter. I came upon this book because I cross-referenced at the end of last year several media outlets, their best lists, because I wanted to find out where did they all agree. And I came up with five books. None of them surprised me. Hilary Mantel, Juno Diaz, or Juno Diaz as he pronounces his name. This book, though, surprised me, Beautiful Ruins by Jess Walter. And I will tell you, it is luscious. It is phenomenal, absorbing. At its premise, at the base of it, is the filming of Cleopatra in Rome in 1962 with Burton and Taylor.
Oh, my.
So it casts off in the beginning in 1962, small fishing village on the Italian coast, and an actress shows up, and she is the lady-in-waiting to Cleopatra, Elizabeth Taylor. And this woman, Dee Moray, is supposedly ill, and she's waiting for her boyfriend at this village to come and take her to Switzerland for an operation, and the innkeeper becomes smitten with her. Well, then we leap ahead to 50 years, to the present time in Hollywood, where the producer, who is a producer for Universal Studios, he's ancient, he has the Michael Jackson face, old body though, and he was the publicist on the movie. And the innkeeper shows up, now an old man, looking for Dee Moray. So in between here and back and forth, you get this wonderful story about all the people, and you get appearances with Bert Burton, who is very, very well done in his drunken ways and showing up. I mean, it's hilarious on one front, it's absorbing on another, and all of the characters and who they are, how they make their choices, the mistakes they have made, the film industry, how superficial it was, is, how it works. It's one of those books where I kept looking forward to it every day to read it.
Sounds like fun.
It is fun. It is, and it's just gorgeous. It's riveting on one hand, heartwarming on another, and I think would appeal to many readers.
Did you know this author before?
I did not.
What else has he done? Do you know?
He has done a few other books, which now make me want to read them. He was actually, there's a national bestseller called The Financial Lives of the Poets, and the National Book Award finalist, The Zero. It also looks like he won an Edgar, which means that he's into mystery and crime, and that was Citizen Vince, Land of the Blind. Anyway, so he does have a couple books out there, but this was my first.
Beautiful Ruins.
Beautiful Ruins by Jess Walter.
I'm writing that down. Thank you, since I am one. So that's good to know. Thank you. Mark Maxwell, you also brought some books. And just give me an overview of really people who come into Half Price Books. It's a great place. It's one of the few places left to browse. You can just, you could spend the day there browsing.
Please do.
Now, hopefully one pays for something at the end. But what are people looking for? What are you noticing, any trends or anything specific that people really go after?
Well, you know, we certainly sell a lot of things that are on the bestseller list now, or things that are driven by reading lists, school lists, and book clubs. But beneath the surface, there is a reservoir of literature, I think, that is really deep and broad. It is always amazing to me the variety of what is available and the hunger that people have for that stuff. I think that one thing that we're seeing as a broad trend lately is that because marketing is getting more sophisticated and better informed, I think you have a broad trend where a lot of kind of monolithic categories of books like romances or mysteries are subdividing themselves into smaller genres, subgenres, or even kind of micro genres. So 10 years ago, you had a very large romance section that might have hundreds of more or less homogeneous novels that were marketed to a broad audience. Now you have smaller groups of things ranging from paranormal romances with supernatural elements to more explicit things like 50 Shades of Grey, and that represents a whole subgenre. And then on the other end, you have a number of writers who have been quite successful with romance books set in the Amish community.
I see a lot of advertisement in Publishers Weekly for those books.
They're quite popular.
Yes,
they're quite
evidently.
Popular. I think in some ways they're a reaction to the fact that, you know, some romances have become more explicit, but there certainly is a market for them. Christian publishing, it really is part of Christian publishing, which has gotten to be a much larger category, especially in the last 10 or 15 years. If you look at you know, how we allocate floor space in our stores, religion sections have exploded in the last 10 years. Young adult sections, particularly since the advent of Harry Potter, which really...
Did Harry Potter really get kids reading?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Good. Absolutely.
And it also got adults reading kids' books or young adult books.
Well, I read them all too and loved them, yeah.
They're objectively great books. And anyone who thinks that children are reading less, I mean, need to look at the Harry Potter books. These are not brief books. I mean, you have little kids lugging around 1,000-page novels. I mean, that's something that warms your heart.
Do the books still sell in your stores?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We can always sell Harry Potter.
All right.
And I think Harry Potter has ignited a resurgence in interest in young adult publishing. And I think you have some really quality work being done there. I mean,
John Green.
Yeah,
the
y'all
Fault in
discussed
our stars.
John Green last time. I mean, there's some really, really quality work being done there.
Well, and he just appeared at Carnegie Hall. So that's an advent in itself to have an author and his brother, who were in Carnegie Hall. Now, both of them have a pretty large YouTube presence. So they do have a music gig going there, too. But he was reading from his book. And, I mean, that's a first at Carnegie Hall, something like that. It was written up in the New York Times.
That's almost more than mainstream for books. Mm-hmm. That's a whole different audience mm-hmm. that really is being spread mm-hmm. around. 50 Shades of Grey, of course, is a publishing phenomenon, whether you like it or not. It is. Has that led to copycats?
I would say it's the other way around. I think the success of 50 Shades of Grey has highlighted a subgenre that existed. And I think there were a lot of
erotic fiction. Or,
sure. Yeah. I think there are authors like Sylvia Day, who I don't want to say toiling in obscurity, but they weren't particularly well-known authors. But now they're having kind of a moment in the sun because of the success of 50 Shades.
Well, I remember, too, this dates me, but I remember when Erica Jong was shocking.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, the,
mm-hmm.
the CF yeah. and the all that
or
stuff.
Jacqueline Suzanne,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one knows who she is anymore, Jacqueline Suzanne. You
can find her at half-price books.
Yes, you can. She outsold the Bible. Mm-hmm. She outsold the Bible. Mm-hmm. With
sure.
It. And
sure.
I must tell you that I, out of curiosity, I picked up one of her books once, Jacqueline Suzanne, and I read the first three sentences and thought, this isn't English.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's no arguing with success. She didn't die a poor lady. Let's put it that way.
Hey, Mark, can you tell me, who is the market, do you think, for 50 Shades of Grey? I mean, the demographics. Who buys it?
Well, I mean, the stereotype, I think, is the housewife. But I think the market is broader than that a little bit. I think that the great thing to me about 50 Shades of Grey, I mean, you certainly make an argument that it's not, great literature. But the great thing to me about it is that, here's a book that began in the most inauspicious way. It began as fan fiction based on the mm-hmm. Twilight series on kind of an obscure website.
Which she began it at her kitchen table,
right,
writing it.
Right.
Just
and
like
it,
Harry Potter. Yeah,
yeah.
Just like J.K. Rowling.
It mm-hmm. became an international phenomenon, not necessarily with the support of the publishing industry, but because people who read that stuff, stood up and said, this is the one, this is, this is the book. And I think that's a new paradigm that's a new way for a book to be born into the world.
I just said that wives are giving this as a present to their husbands to say, hey, let's be a little more romantic. And
sure.
Mm-hmm. It's never a bad idea.
Never
certainly.
A bad
but
idea.
I, are we still at the place in history where somebody buying that book from you would kind of be sneaking it up to the register? And I hope I don't see anybody I know.
Well, it's displayed prominently
right.
Kroger and
it was
Giant
a whole
Eagle.
Series, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just one book at this point.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that is going away a little bit. I think it's becoming a mainstream phenomenon.
Right.
And I mean, you can't argue with the numbers on it. I mean, I think that there's a certain amount of safety in numbers, right?
Well, and its success, too. In the publishing industry, the employees at Random House, everyone got a $5,000 bonus at the end of the year. Everyone. And they were totally surprised. And that says a lot about how well that book sold.
Is it fair to say that the book is poorly written?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I have not opened it. I would say that everyone is saying that
it is. Cassie's not going to read that book.
I would say so, but I talked with some of my friends actually who have read it. And one of the things I was discussing was, why is it that this book is so successful? Then there is the book called Hotel Iris by Yoko Ogawa.
I read that on your recommendation. Yeah.
Yes. Now that has the same theme in it.
It's erotic S&M.
Mm,
okay. Thank
you.
Yes. Yes. Well, and in Hotel Iris, it's a small book, and Yoko Ogawa is very, very famous in Japan. And actually, she's got a new book coming out in January. Now, she's not an erotic writer, but she wrote very well about that kind of a situation that happened. Anyway, why I was saying to my friend, did that not make it here in 50 Shades of Grey? Well, she was saying 50 Shades of Grey is much more accessible, much more fun, much more light. I don't even know the word.
Much
she
heavily
said.
Marketed,
Yes,
I mean,
I think Hotel Iris was darker.
Hotel was darker. Also, it's literary fiction, really.
Yes,
it
is.
It would be assigned to that genre. Not, I mean, if you put a sign up saying erotic fiction, you're going to get a line out the door. I mean, let's face it. We have to take a break. We'll be back in 60 seconds with more of All Sides Weekend Books. Listen, call us up and tell us if you think it matters that 50 Shades of Grey is well written or not. 292-8513.
This week, 89.7 NPR News would normally be doing our winter membership drive. But because of sustaining memberships, we've been able to eliminate this pledge drive. Sustaining members of the future of WOSU. Your $15 or $20 per month recurring gift will ensure the highest quality of programming and the least amount of on-air pledge drives. Don't wait to renew your membership. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit us at WOSU.org.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. It's 17 degrees with some snow still falling. Expect that wintry mix to continue throughout the day today, a high of 23. There's a chance of some snow for tonight as well, a low of 18 degrees. Cloudy skies and a high of 26 on Saturday, and then some sunshine and a high of 32 on Sunday. All Sides Weekend continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy here with All Sides Book, back with our panel, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, and her blog, thelongestchapter.com. Fred Anderle is our poet laureate. I don't know if it, but he is a great presence here at WOSU and part of the humanities at The Ohio State University. And Mark Maxwell is the store manager of the Bethel Road Half Price Books. We had just been talking about 50 Shades of Grey and whether or not it was well written, if that mattered or whatever. And I wanted to ask, sort of related to that, has anybody read J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter, her new adult novel? Her latest one is geared to the adult market. And I know it's on the bestseller lists, but does anyone know anything about it?
It's called The Casual Vacancy. It was fairly well reviewed. I'm not sure if it's considered to be commercially successful. I mean, clearly, it's a book about small town politics in England, and it deals pretty extensively with class issues there. Clearly, it's not what fans of Harry Potter were necessarily expecting. So it was kind of a tough sell for J.K. Rowling's. But then again, at this point in her career, she can write about what she feels strongly about.
Imagine if she hadn't written Harry Potter. Let's say if she had done this book first.
Right.
It probably would have done better.
I agree with that, yeah.
And then if she had done the Harry Potter series.
We were discussing over the break whether the Harry Potter series was well written, and I think it was, especially the fourth book, I believe, called The Order of the Phoenix. I mean, it was a chilling situation, which Potter and all the wizards are on the run, you know, and it was very nicely done. Cassie, I think, as you pointed out, the final book in the series, which tried to wrap up every ending and every possibility, and was 700 pages was a mess, but some of them were really lovely, I think, for adults as well. Yeah.
Our number is 292-8513. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. We'd like to hear from you. What are you reading? What did you like? What could you recommend? And Fred Anderle, it's time. I would love for you to read some poetry for us.
Oh, okay, sure.
Set it up for us. And
would you like a Winter Be Gone poem, or would you like a poem in which winter is quite lovely?
I love winter. I'm a winter guy.
Too.
You
yeah,
love winter.
I'm a winter guy,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is a poem. This takes us back to our childhood, I think, when we were all winter boys and girls, and this is called Winter Boys. It's the full life of winter's blustery height, ice and flurry and sharp-scented cold, could be mistaken for nature's call to death, but its character, soft landscape, chill flame. So we'll pull on big boots and tussle out the door, trek on back to the river frozen deep, jump up and down on the ice until it cracks, walk across water like apprentice Jesus, then up along the railroad track, hollering down the valley, teetering on the slippery rails, pounding our chests at the approaching engine, falling away at the very last second down into warm and welcoming drifts. We pack up solid ice balls, lob them over the precipice, listen for their smack against the distant shivery pavement. Then we clamber down the hill to the snow-snarled street, dart out suddenly, grab rear bumpers, pogey on the cars. All the neighbor girls are trying on their delicate skates. They're ready to giggle across the ice in frilly skirts. They need our trusty shoveling to open up reluctant ponds. And that we do, but we disdain their dainty pirouetting. We're tough guys, body slamming each other on the ice. The pond is a great hibernal wrestling ring, and it's only when some peewee warrior cracks his head and wails that we shrug away from rowdy bickering. We're headed out for an icy exploit, ready to revel in the frigid winter world. We'll chop and stack an igloo fort, or roll up a snowman, push a lump of coal for eyes and a dead carrot nose. All the frail adults indoors, but this, our wild universe, We stride right forward into the knifey wind, breaking a path out back to the trees, and we don't need any big brother snowshoes. It's there in the woods that we'll build a fire with matches purloined from mother's purses, crisp sticks gathered by her aching mitten hands. Suddenly we're warming and invincible. All around, the sky is milky white and falling. Not a sound in the little tree grove. Our piping voices hushed and still as the great being of winter embraces our small daring.
There's a lot going on in that poem, Fred.
There's
a great deal going on in that poem.
Indeed.
That's a rich banquet there. And remind us about Hospital Poets.
Hospital Poets, this Monday, the 28th at noon at the Ross Hart Hospital. I'll be reading much more than my poetry, but poetry of all the greats.
How many readings do you do, generally?
In a year?
Let's say
five or six. Yeah.
And where?
And where? Oh, we were up in Sandusky. Jerry Roscoe, another poet, and I were up in Sandusky. You know Jerry.
I know Jerry.
And we went up to the Bottom Dog Press's place up there in beautiful Sandusky, which is right on Lake Erie. And all the gulls fly over the main street and call out as you're reading indoors in the coffee house. And then at the Rumba Cafe, Steve Abbott's series on Monday evenings. Yeah. Read there last week. So yeah.
We'll look forward to that. 292-8513 is the number. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. And Mark Maxwell from Half Price Books has a stack of books he's brought with us. I think he has a graphic novel there, too. And on the top, we see Salman Rushdie.
Right. Salman Rushdie last year had an autobiography, which came out to mixed reviews.
Hated it.
It was kind of self-indulgent. I think you can make that argument. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to plug some old books in particular. It's my job, right? And I like to wait a little bit to read something. I think pop culture is kind of a crucible, and if you wait a little while, the stuff that remains is worthy. This is an earlier novel by Salman Rushdie. It's called Shame. It's set in a country that is clearly supposed to be Pakistan, and it's kind of a generational drama, maybe along the lines of Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude. It's a short book. It's quite beautiful. Salman Rushdie is a great line-by-line writer, and that really comes through in this book. And it doesn't have some of the self-indulgence that I think mars some of his other
books. Well, apparently in his autobiography, he took off an even scores with a number of people, among other things.
I guess he did.
That was not well-received.
Right.
I read it, and what really kind of repelled me was that he had no conscience about putting a lot of other people in harm's way through his actions, and it was including his 8-year-old son. So I just, you know, I really, anyway, with all respect, that wasn't, it was called...
The name is...
I know, there were two names of authors, but anyway, Salman Rushdie and...
He took it after, it was named after, you're right, it was... Anton Chekhov was one.
Joseph Conrad and Anton.
Anton Chekhov.
Right. You can take that off your list and read Shame, which is Mark Maxwell's recommendation. How about you, Cassie? You have one for us?
I do. I'll start with a very fun book, City of Dark Magic by, this is a pseudonym, Magnus Flight. It's written by two women anyway, it's a wonderful story. It's fantasy, and I'm not a fantasy person, but this one got me because there's a protagonist who is a doctoral candidate at Harvard in musicology, and she goes to Prague to study and curate Beethoven manuscripts for a family museum. And this family museum, or this family, goes back, you know, hundreds of years, and they have all of these museum relics that the Nazis took, and they've gathered them back, and then the communists took them, and then they gathered them back. So they have this grand opening going on, and where the fantasy comes in and the mystery comes in and the lightness and fun is that it is run by Prince Max, who has a rival in Italy that's a cousin who feels she should be overseeing this, and he has a companion that is a 400-year-old dwarf. So here we're going into the another realm, and there is a U.S. senator who is eager to get into Prague Castle, where the museum is, because there are some letters there that reveal she had an affair with a KGB agent in the 1970s. And it goes on and on like this, and it's really wonderful in all the little mysteries. And on top of it, there is some time travel in there.
So you get sci-fi music, historical fiction, and fantasy as well.
Right, and the history of Prague Castle, the history of Beethoven, and that's where the time travel comes into, because she is able to, like Scrooge, go back in time, not participate in it, but she can see what's going on, and so she sees Beethoven, and then the mystery of the immortal beloved comes in, too.
Oh, pop quiz here. Who is the pretty well-known science fiction and fantasy writer who works at the Ohio State University at the Office of Academic Affairs, right on the Oval? Anybody know his name?
No, do you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Charles Coleman Finlay, F-I-N-L-A-Y, Charles Finlay. Mark, you're nodding your head in recognition. Maybe his recent novel is The Prodigal Troll. The Prodigal Troll. And the blurb says, enter a world of trolls and demons and dagger-toothed lions where a human child lost in the wilderness has to give up his destiny to find himself. Charles Finlay, The Prodigal Troll. Now, he's a Hugo and Nebula Award nominee. Mm. Those are big awards
are
in the science
awards.
Fiction and fantasy field. He's right here on campus.
That's interesting.
We'll have to have him back. We'll have to have him on the show at
some point. Absolutely.
If you're listening, call us and let us know what you're reading. 292-8513. Jerry has been waiting patiently. Let's take a call from Jerry. We have a few more calls after that, so we do need to be brief. Hi, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Purdy. Enjoy you and Boyce Lancaster and John Whitmire on FM. Great shows, but I wanted to mention the book War is a Racket by Marine General Smedley D. Butler, who won not one, but two Congressional Medals of Honor. Can't do that anymore. And he rose up from the ranks, I mean, from a private. And great book. One of the quotes, I'll just be brief. Why don't those oil companies, and this was written in the 30s, why don't those oil companies have their own flag to put on their own personal property, perhaps one with a gas pump on it? That is a quote from that book, and I was able to get it a few years ago from Barnes & Noble, and a small book, but he tells about it. Most people don't remember. I thought about it when I heard everything on the news this morning was about women being able to be in combat. Yeah, I'd like to have him on the destroyer I was on, Baloney.
And Jerry, we will thank you for your call. We've got to move on. We've got several waiting on. Thanks. Always good to talk to you, Jerry. Thank you. We have an email from Alex. This might be interesting for you, Mark. I inherited the family house. We have hundreds of books, some of them old and worn. I brought a few to half price for a modest return, but worn books have little sale value. So where is the best place to send old books? I don't want to throw them in the trash.
Well, please do bring them to us. We will always make an offer for everything. What we can use in the store, we will. What we can sell, we will, because that's how we put food on the table. But what we can't sell, we'll do our best to donate or recycle. We have some amazing donation programs in town with Columbus Public Schools in particular. My boss, Chris Hewing, and a local entrepreneur, Linda Reese, set up a program called Books for Kids to Keep, where we take it's been just many, many thousands of books over the years. We take them into Columbus Public Schools and just open up the boxes and let the kids take them. And it's a great program because there are schools in town where the kids go home at night to houses where there aren't books on the shelves. So that's something that we can do something about, and our customers can help us do something about.
And you could always bring a little worn, but good books to any Columbus library. They love to have them for their friends at the library sale. Any library, just bring them in a bag and drop them off. You know?
So there are a lot of possibilities, and they all do good for other people, which is nice. We have an email from Stephen on Facebook. He found us on Facebook. I am reading and enjoying Generals by Thomas Ricks and A Destiny Disrupted by Taman Ansari. Two titles I don't know, but I'm glad to know about them. I'm asking people what you've been reading, and we have Nancy on the line from Columbus with some recommendations for us. Hello, Nancy.
Hello. Since Fred Annerly's there today, I wanted to comment. His poetry reminds me about winter. It's as beautiful as E.B. White's prose about winter. And so this time of year, I usually get out the essays of E.B. White, and I was reading those this morning with a snowfall.
Mm. Oh, that's a beautiful book.
That's nice to be reminded of.
The other thing, I remember meeting Fred Annerly more than a decade ago at the Columbus School for Girls, and he was there when Anne Lamott was there.
That's right. Introduced Annie. That's right.
And I recently read her book about prayer.
Yeah, very nice.
Then I jumped, and I just finished Christopher Hitchens' Mortality.
Oh, how did you like that?
I couldn't believe how well written it was. It affected me deeply. And I asked my sister to read it, and she wanted to read it on her Kindle or whatever those things are called. You have to hold the book.
Me too.
And then I got it on CD. And what I found about listening to it after I read it, Simon Pringle did an all right job. The foreword by Hitchens' editor was all right to hear, but I was particularly found it moving to hear his widow, Carol Blue, do the afterword. To hear it affected me more deeply than reading it. But if you want to tackle something that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life, read Mortality and then listen to his widow on the CD. Mm.
Wonderful recommendations. Nancy, thank you very much for your call. 292-8513. You can also send emails to allsides@wosu.org is a number of you are choosing to do. We are also WOSU All Sides on Facebook, so you can find us there. Cassie Rose, give me something. Hit me again. Another
good one.
Good one.
The Forgiven by Lawrence Osborne. He's another author that has written several books in the past, but I just discovered him at the end of the year. This is a very seductive novel, and that takes place in Morocco in the desert. There's a very decadent party going on. But on the way to this party is a British couple, and there's an accident in the middle of the night because it's a winding road, and they kill a Muslim boy. And they put him in the trunk and take him to the party. They don't know what else to do. Well, this party is hugely decadent, the kind that is written up in lifestyle magazines all over the world. And they're flying in fruit from the United States, water from Switzerland, and the people are all flying in here, and it's a long weekend. Well, here is this accident that has happened. So what he is bringing up, the author is bringing up, is issues of morality and justice, how justice happens in a out-of-the-way desert place in Morocco versus how it would happen in the United States or in Britain. And the driver, the British man, was drunk, and his wife was arguing with him. So that is playing out in the novel, too. What happens is that the father of the boy comes and wants to take him to his village and talk with him. And so he has to get in this old beat-up car with a lot of Muslim friends and of this old man, and they drive out to the village, and you don't know what's going to happen to this British man. So on the one hand, there's a little bit of intrigue, but that is not what the novel is about. It's really about the personalities, the ethics that are involved, this background of the drugs and the alcohol and beautiful people.
Sounds frightening, too, on some levels.
It is on a certain level. It is. It is so beautifully written. And that seductive engagement whereby you do not want to put this book down. And it is just a lovely book that I am sorry did not get more play.
Title and author again?
It's called The Forgiven by Lawrence Osborne.
Okay.
Chris, could I mention a book that I've just read a bit, but I'm not sure I want to read it. It's called Better Never to Have Been, The Harm of Coming into Existence. Better Never to Have Been. Oxford University Press, this is not a joke. David Benatar is a professor of philosophy at the University of Cape Town, South Africa. He says existence is so awful for human beings that it's better if you were never born. And he says, in fact, there's an ethical obligation not to have children and to immediately have an abortion if you become pregnant almost instantly. He realizes this will end the human race, indeed, if his philosophy is followed. But he's not kidding about this. This is not satire.
This is not a novel you're talking
about.
No,
this is a philosopher, and it's been well received. It may be just a thought experiment, but he says, nonetheless, he's serious. Better never to have been, the harm of coming into existence. And he says, if you think your existence is not awful, you're kidding yourself. Better you were never born. Well, I'm not sure I want to read this, but the New York Times featured it in a review, and I thought I'd mention it.
Well, it's certainly provocative. It'll stimulate readership and conversation. I think it sounds perfectly horrible, but
it does indeed. Yeah, right.
Well, and if Oxford University Press is publishing it, it has to have some sort of merit.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Can I mention, by the way, just quickly?
Real fast, because we have to go to a break. Go ahead.
A book that really is good, Why Does the World Exist? An existential detective story by Jim Holt. Talks to philosophers, scientists, to ask the question, why is there something rather than nothing? Witty, amusing, clear, penetrating, nice.
We like all those adjectives. We will be back shortly after a break with Fred Anderle, Cassie Rose, and Mark Maxwell. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away.
Because of my unfortunate situation with Avery, I'm alone. And I know, of course, that you're not seeing anyone. Therefore, I've decided that you and I should become friends with benefits.
No, thank you, please.
The final episode of 30 Rock airs next week. On the next Fresh Air, we feature interviews with Tina Fey, Alec Baldwin, and Tracy Morgan. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And thanks for joining us today for All Sides Weekend. Remember, you can listen back to today's shows and all episodes of All Sides with Ann Fisher at our website, wosu.org/allsides. There you can explore the archive. It includes audio, video, and podcasts of every show. That's wosu.org/allsides. It's 19 degrees. Expect some more snow today, an accumulation of 1 to 3 inches, and a high of 23. There's still a chance of snow for tonight, a low of 18 degrees. Cloudy skies on Saturday and a high of 26. Partly cloudy Saturday night, a low of 15. And some sunshine with a high of 32 on Sunday. Support comes from ARC Industries, providing business solutions to Columbus's industrial, retail, and commercial markets, and helping people with disabilities find meaningful work. ARC Industries, dedicated to the success of its customers, employees, and community. ARC Industries is online at arcind.com. All Sides Weekend continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy, back with Fred Anderle, Cassie Rose, and Mark Maxwell. Mark is from the Bethel Road store of Half Price Books. I know that because he's wearing a shirt that says so, thank goodness, so I don't have to rely on a script. And you brought with you a graphic novel. I'd like to talk a little bit about that because that's a real booming part of the publishing world.
Right. I think, interest in graphic novels is growing exponentially. I think at this point, I think we realize that there's some really quality work being done there. Art Spiegelman won a Pulitzer Prize for Mouse.
And he sort of started it with Mouse, don't you? I mean, he didn't start the genre, but he brought it up to the purview of making it a genre that would be
Absolutely.
Reviewed and
right. And that, I mean, that Pulitzer Prize, I think, is kind of the cornerstone of the mainstream respectability that graphic novels now enjoy. The book that I brought is Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. It is a graphic novel about graphic novels. This book is 20 years old this year. It begins with just sort of discussing the history and etiquette of graphic novels, but it's a very well-respected book because it goes a little further. It ends up being one of those books that is better than it has a right to be. He very much unpacks graphic novels in much the same way that Marshall McLuhan thought about other types of media. So it's quite fascinating. If you're just getting interested in graphic novels, it's a great place to start. If you already have a love and appreciation for graphic novels, it will certainly deepen it and make you look at it in a new light.
And I should have asked you this earlier, but very briefly, what is a graphic novel? How is that defined? I know, but I want to make sure everybody understands what.
Yeah, to the uninitiated, we're talking about comic books.
Okay, yeah.
You know, the same Superman, Batman, Spider-Man comic books. But now we tend to see them in a little larger format. Instead of a 28-page issue, you're looking at sometimes a 200 or 300-page novel. And artists are beginning to discover, artists and writers are beginning to discover that there are potentials inherent in that art form that are extraordinary. And we're just starting to see that potential realized, I think.
And I wonder, too, if that draws people who don't normally read books and then gets them into the reading habit or not. I mean, that's just a question I think worth pondering.
Well, it's a visual. It's a very interesting visual and reading experience. And there are some classics that have been turned into graphic novels now. And I mean, and they can be very compelling stories, but I think it has to do with how you.
Do you remember the old classics illustrated?
I was just going to say that, right?
Yeah, sure.
If you're a certain age, you know, I remember Treasure Island as a comic book. We have Sean from Westerville has some recommendations for us. Hello, Sean.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to say first to Fred, it's wonderful to hear your voice. I smiled as soon as I turned on the radio.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, you just mentioned Why Does the World Exist? I'm reading that right now.
Fabulous.
It's a very, very good book. I like how he explores some of the past philosophers, Heidegger and Schopenhauer and some of the guys and what their particular, the way they lived their life and how it affected their philosophy. It's really interesting as he goes about answering the question of why is there something rather than nothing.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's, yeah.
I love some of the chapter titles. Could Our World Have Been Created by a Hacker? Or The World as a Bit of Light Verse. It's great.
Sean, yeah, thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have one more thing I wanted. It's a throwback. I got a first edition of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I found it in the books at Half Price Books, of all places, and read that, and it's very much in the same vein as the Why Does the World Exist, except he explores the idea of quality in the universe. And really good book.
Thank you very much, Sean, for the recommendations. Appreciate that. 292-8513. Ed from Baltimore is on the line. Hello, Ed.
Yes. I'm currently reading a book called Remade in the USA by a man called Todd Lipscomb. It's subtitled How We Can Restore Jobs, Retool Manufacturing, and Compete with the World. He spent about 15 years in the Far East working in manufacturing and managing corporations, and he took his observations of what they were doing and what we were not doing and came back to this country and started a company called MadeInUSAForever.com, which more or less is an Amazon for American-made type products. And because of his experience with that and what people told him they needed or were trying to do, he wrote this book. I'm partway through it, and he lays out the case of what we did or didn't do, what the companies that we're dealing with, the countries that we're dealing with, rather, are doing, and how we can turn this around. And he even goes into fossil fuel argument. It's solvable, he believes. And I think it's an interesting read. And anybody who's concerned about our competitiveness in the world, this is an interesting look at how that he believes how it came about and how it can be solved.
Ed, is the book convincing to you?
I think it is so far. I'm about three or four chapters in, and he has quite a few charts showing timelines of when things started, giving ideas about some legislation that started or what companies decided to do. I haven't gotten far enough in to get to his argument about what we can actually do yet. At this point, he's laying the base for his conclusions. But I've heard him on the radio a few times, and I've also gone to his website a few times, and I believe he makes a very good case that we can compete if we actually do have the will. But he also tells this is what we have to do in order to compete.
Remade in the USA. Ed, thank you very much for the recommendation. Appreciate your call. 292-8513. We have an email from Susan. Susan writes to us, I'm spending President's Day weekend in a cabin in the Hocking Hills. I want a book that I can read in a day or two while sitting by a big fireplace. Fred Anderle.
I've got one here for
you. Okay.
It's a mystery story. It's called The Dog Who Knew Too Much by Spencer Quinn. It's a series, the Chet and Bernie Mysteries. Chet is a dog, and the dog narrates the mysteries. I can recommend this unhesitatingly. And the dog, it's all from a dog's point of view, and he says, you know, he doesn't understand metaphoric speech. So Bernie, the detective, will say something like, something smells funny here. And Chet, the narrator, the dog, will say, everything smells good to me here. Bacon is frying in the kitchen. It smells fine to me. Or say, Bernie's a great guy, but you know, when he comes out of the shower, I have to tell you that humans don't look very good naked. There's a whole, it starts with a dog on it. It moves to, thereby hangs a tail, T-A-I-L. The Dog Who Knew Too Much. It's the series by Spencer Quinn, the Chet and Bernie mystery series. Very nice stuff.
Thank you, Fred. That sounds terrific. This is a book also that's getting a lot of press right now, The 12 Tribes of Hattie by Ayanna Mathis. Cynthia on Facebook writes a new, she's reading a great novel, that one, The 12 Tribes of Hattie. A young African-American also tells the story of the children of the Great Migration. You had a little recognition there, Cassie.
Well, to the point that it is getting a lot of press, and I think that's because of the Oprah effect, because Oprah chose it, and it also then got a front page spread on the Sunday New York Times.
Yeah.
It looks like a very, very good book, and this is this author's debut novel. So it is giving her a meteoric rise.
Out of the ballpark.
Yes.
It's on my to-do list. Mm-hmm. The 12 Tribes of Hattie by Ayanna Mathis from Cynthia on Facebook. Thank you, Cynthia. We have a number of callers waiting. Let's get to who we can. Let's get to Doug in Columbus. Hello, Doug.
Hello, how are you, Fred?
Good. Well, I'm not Fred, but Fred's fine, too. Thank you. Go ahead.
We're all fine here.
No, I mean, another great resource for book recommendations, of course, is Nancy Pearl and Book Lust. That's one that I turn to again and again when I'm looking for something. My point being, though, was I'm a frequent user of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and I'm so glad to see the guy on your panel from Half Price Books, because that's an amazing place to go. All
Thank
of the
you.
Libraries also have places where you can go in and buy books for 50 cents and a dollar, and the dollars that get raised from that actually go back to support the library, and probably at this point we'll be supporting our top-rated library's expansion into the Deaf School Park. So I just wanted to make that point. Great show, great topics.
Doug, thank you. Thanks very much. A very intriguing call next. Not that they all aren't intriguing, but Candace is on the line asking about opinions on Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace that I just finished reading. Hi, Candace.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Just wanted to ask why you would recommend that for us to read.
Go ahead.
Infinite Jest, I think you could make an argument that Infinite Jest is one of the great novels of the late 20th century. It is a sprawling, complicated, sometimes heartwarming story. It is more ambitious than the other novels of its generation, and you could argue more successful. I've read it three times. It's amazing.
I think that it might also help to read, if you're willing to read the biography that came out about
right.
him first, because much of his life he wrote into in
right.
Infinite Jest, and it therefore may give more context and more meaning to it.
That book is called Every Story is a Love, something like that.
Every Love Story is a Ghost Story.
It's a ghost by D.T. Max,
because
we had him on as a guest on the last program.
Yes, we did.
We did an
yeah.
interview with him, yes, and that is a very compelling book.
Have we
convinced you, Candace?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. I read it myself, and it was a hard read for me. It's very long, and but I'll tell you, I've never read anything like it. I don't think there is anything like it, really.
It's better the second time.
It's better the second time. Well, all right. That's good to know. Mary Jo sends us an email who says, good question. How will we have used bookstores if everyone switches to Kindles, Nooks, and other e-readers?
Wow. You know, I think the statistics are showing that the e-book and the e-reader situation is not doing as well as the industry predicted. And people
right.
do love holding a book, the perfect format, really, in their hand. So they're not doing quite as well.
Mm-hmm. And also, it's just another choice,
yeah.
is what it is. And so
yeah.
there are many people that only go to the library. There are many people that don't want to pay full price for a book, so they go to Half Price
right.
Book and shop the used bookstores.
Yeah.
There are people who want the Kindle and love the Kindle or the Nook, but and that's how they get their books. But they're also have a limited supply there,
right?
Because there are many of the newest books that they can't get.
And a Kindle or a Nook is a great sales tool because you got to buy all the books, or most of the books cost you money. Whereas you can go to the library and get your favorite book for free. So it's really a sales gimmick in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And we tend to think of it as an either or sort of thing. Studies show that readers who do pick up e-books often still read physical
sure.
books. I mean, they're not mutually exclusive.
I mean, you could read them in the bathtub. You can read them at the beach. I mean, the book is the perfect technology.
You can give it
right?
to a friend.
Yeah, you can give it to a friend as well. Yeah,
I do know that a lot of the books out of copyright, and we just mentioned Ulysses has just come out of copyright, are free, I think, from the retails. If you in a Kindle, they don't charge you for that. I'm not sure how that works, but that's what I was told. I'm
right.
a Luddite myself, so I probably drop it in the bathtub and leave it there. So.
Well, I think it's the whole experience of it. I was leading a book group, and there was one person there who was planning on reading the book on a Kindle. It was Sacred Hunger by Barry Unsworth, a 600-page book. Well, she didn't know how long it was because she downloads it on the Kindle. She doesn't know it's 600 pages. She was trying to read it like 3 or 4 days before the meeting, and she was very frustrated by it because she got lost and couldn't navigate her way. She couldn't flip through it, see how many chapters. And that's just one of the problems, I think, or challenges people have. But I know people love the Kindle.
Another challenge is if you want to go back, let's say, several pages and rehearse a fact or a character to yourself. In a book, it's easy to do that. You kind of have a sense of where that might be, but on a Kindle or a Nook, you may not have that sense.
Yeah.
And you know what? When you mention David Foster Wallace, you get follow-up calls. Chris is on the line from Westerville. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yeah, I just also want to mention they recently put out a book from David Foster Wallace, another book of essays of his, both Flesh and Not. And that, well, I think recently, I know it came out, you know, within the past year. I think it was actually just a couple months ago. And it's really good. So also, if somebody wants to get introduced to David Foster Wallace, he's an incredible fiction writer. But on top of that, he writes some of the best essays that I've read. It's really funny stuff, insightful. Just he's just a great author altogether.
Thank you very much for that recommendation. That's a good point. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, also, I want to put a shout out to George Saunders. Just came out with a new book of short fiction, and please buy his stuff because I want to keep him writing. And Fred, you were being too kind when you said that. Is it fair to say Fifty Shades of Grey poorly written? It's atrociously written.
But okay. did your wife or girlfriend give you a copy? That's the question.
That's the other thing that's actually nice that you asked is if you want to sneak up to the counter. People have that open on their desks openly at work where I work.
Well, me
definitely
too.
Not that stigma there. But I've gotten a chance to thumb through it and read it, and titillation fiction is all I can.
Listen, you're probably a young man. Try Jacqueline and Suzanne and call us back next program. Thank you very much for your call, Chris. I appreciate it. Speaking of Chris's recommendation, it happens to be at the top of Mark Maxwell's pile.
Right. I have a George Saunders in my stack. He does have a new book called The 10th of December. The New York Times called it the best book you'll read this year, which it's January. So that's that's quite a statement. The book I brought is a little older. It's called Pastoralia. George Saunders is often gets grouped together with David Foster Wallace. He's another kind of postmodernist writer. He writes very inventive stories. The charm of his stories, I think, is that he writes about characters in very strange situations, but they still have kind of mundane human problems. I think a common criticism of postmodernist fiction is that it removes the human element, and George Saunders is good at finding it.
David Foster Wallace died several years ago by his own hand, sadly. Right. He was someone who coped with addictions and depression all his life, but he left scores of books that of dense but funny and moving fiction, and another book that is a favorite title of mine is Interviews with Hideous Men, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'm working on that now.
Hideous Men
right now. We have about 2 minutes left, so I just want to recap a few things. Fred Anderle is reading for Hospital Poets on Monday, the 28th, from noon to 1:30 at the Ross Hart Hospital Auditorium at the OSU Medical Complex. This sounds like a good idea, the Hospital Poets, and I think you did the first one, didn't you, in 2011?
Yeah, a couple of years ago at the cancer hospital, right?
It's poets, but is it all genres of the arts that come in and
well, for this series, it is poets. And Anna Soter, who you know, retired from the OSU faculty, set it up. And we'll have a series of poets coming in through the year at the various hospitals at OSU. Terrific idea, I think, yeah.
I'll pay attention and make sure that we get the word out when each presentation is. Cassie Rose, we have 90 seconds. Real fast, one more recommendation. Just yell the title.
A memoir called La Petite by Michelle Halberstadt.
And tell me about Half Price Books in 30 seconds.
Please come visit us. We have a great selection of stuff. We are buying stuff from the public every day. Our prices are very affordable. Our staff is friendly and quite knowledgeable. Some of them, I'm sure, are listening right now. So, hi.
And everybody has called in today to say it's wonderful to have Fred Anderle back on the air. I cannot agree with you more. Mark Maxwell is the store manager of the Bethel Road Half Price Books. Fred Anderle is a star. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.